Bandwidth for this podcast is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com. This is We Have Communicators, episode 153, recorded on March 21st, 2012. Enjoy! All right, it's time for We Have Communicators, the show that covers all things iOS and beyond. I am Michael Johnston, and with me, as usual, is Adam Christensen from the MacCast. Hey, Adam, how's it going?
Good, how you doing?
I'm good.
Yeah?
Yep, recording a little earlier, so I have a little more energy.
Yeah.
It's daylight out. Of course, I think if we recorded in 2 hours, it would still be daylight out.
It would. The time change,
this,
you know?
Wonderful time change in the... Is it unseasonably warm everywhere? Because it's awesome here.
It's a pro... I'm sorry.
Jeff is here, too. Now you can talk. Now you can talk, Jeff.
Now I can talk.
Yeah.
Thank you. It's surprisingly warm here.
Yeah, it's good. It's awesome.
It doesn't change much here, so we don't notice it all too often.
You cool people in California with your 75 degrees all the time.
Well, it's just San Diego, you know. Yeah, C70 and sunny.
Yeah.
That's the weather report.
Boring.
That's your tax dollars at work.
Yeah, for that big weather machine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dr. Theopolis makes sure that it's always 70 and sunny in San Diego.
Mm-hmm.
And there's like three people out there right now that are going, oh my God, he just made that reference.
Yeah, I don't know what you're talking about.
That's okay. I'm just going to leave it out there like that.
That's fine. That's how we do it. So... New iPad sales top 3 million in just 4 days.
I get credit for one.
Yeah, Jeff, what about you?
I get credit for one.
Awesome. I can't be included in that.
Slacker.
Yeah, I know.
You just couldn't justify the not enough in it or
well,
insufficient funds?
Initially, I was planning to sell my current one, the iPad 2, to my mother.
Yeah.
She backed out. She's planning to buy it in April. I haven't told her that I think I might not want to do it now. But I checked it out briefly at the Best Buy, and I'm not sure I need it. I think I need a better iPhone before I need a better iPad at this point.
You know, I did a whole episode, or my last episode was, and we'd actually talked to Jeff, as a matter of fact, talking to people who had purchased new iPads about... you know, some of the differences and stuff like that. And after doing 4 separate interviews and with my own observations, kind of came to that conclusion as well, especially if you're an iPad 2 owner and you've been very happy with the iPad 2.
Yeah.
Because from my standpoint, you know, the screen, while gorgeous, and people get me wrong on this, they think, oh, you're saying that, you know, Retina doesn't make a difference. It does. It makes a difference.
It does.
But...
yeah.
But at the end of the day, reality-wise, the iPad 2 has a very, very good screen.
Yeah.
Better than, I think, any other tablet out there beyond the new iPad. So it's sort of like, what do you try? You're fixing something that wasn't really broken or improving something that wasn't really that bad to begin with. So, yes, it's great and it's wonderful. But when you have an iPad 2, if... you don't need that. Well, then what do you have? You have the camera, which is, again, great upgrade, awesome camera. Pictures look great. I don't think that many people take pictures with their iPads.
Yeah,
I hope
want
not.
To. Right. So, you know, I purposely was that guy this last weekend and took my iPad out and used that as my camera just to mainly test out the camera. And it takes great pictures. But so you have that. Processor speed, not a ton there. I mean, I haven't noticed huge improvements.
Yeah, well, there was a Geekbench.
Oh, just look at my review. I've got the charts.
Yeah, it's a gigahertz ARM V7. I don't know if that's any different than the other one, but the big difference would be the RAM.
Yeah.
Up from 512, you're
512.
At... No, it's a gig now.
Is it a gig?
It's I thought
it was a gig now.
Yeah, which is good. Now, that for me, that... would be great if I used up a lot of RAM, it seemed, on my iPad, but I think that that's really more of an issue on my phone than on the iPad. And when I made the primary reason I moved from the original iPad to the iPad 2 was just because my web browsing habits on my iPad and whatever else I did on there were such that it was sluggish once I got into it. And with the iPad 2, I really don't feel that way about it. I think maybe there are a few times every once in a while, but honestly, it's, for the most part, a very pleasant experience. And I think that more RAM would definitely help it, but the processor is still 1 gigahertz. Graphics are substantially improved, as we've discussed. So I think that it's better for games more than anything else. And I guess if you're going to be watching some high definition video as well, but I don't do games too much on my iPad.
That's so weird, because the iPad is my preferred gaming platform out of my iOS devices. Actually, it's my preferred gaming platform, period.
Well, it would probably be mine as well if I played games at all, really. It's not that I don't play games on my iPad. It's just I don't really play that many games.
All right, I'll give you that.
So
begrudgingly.
Okay.
But, I mean, it's very hard to justify. The end point of all of that was, you know, if you're very happy with your iPad 2, it's hard to make the argument that this version of the iPad is a must-have.
Sure. I mean,
I think it's a very nice to have, and it's got some great enhancements and great improvements, but it's definitely not, you know, a must-have upgrade for already happy iPad owners. That was my only point.
Yeah. So what, for you guys, what's the big seller for you? What's the, either the reason you bought it, or I guess ultimately the reason why you're in love with it? Adam?
Well, I mean, I bought it because I was able to sell my iPad 1s and get some cash to help fund it. I had a gift card to help fund it. So there was some heavy subsidizing going into the purchase.
Okay. You had an iPad 2 before?
What?
Did you have an iPad 2 before?
And I had an iPad 2, but that was then getting recycled down to my wife, who had one of the iPad 1s that we sold. So with all that, and plus just for the podcast to have it to be able to talk about and review and stuff like that, that was why I bought it. Now, without those factors in play, I think I would have been in your camp, Michael. I think I would have went to the Apple store. I think I would have looked at the differences and went, you know, maybe I can wait. And also knowing there's going to be another one in a year.
Yeah. Right? That's the one I probably
it's like,
want.
I can wait. I can be on that 2-year upgrade cycle.
Yeah. So is there anything in it that you're surprisingly in love with, or maybe not so surprisingly?
Something that I think could ultimately be a really kind of good feature for me is the dictation. I think that might be the sleeper feature that I find I end up using more than I thought I would. Siri for me has been similar with that, specifically with texting, you know, being able to send texts in the car.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I would imagine, you know, as much as I've gotten pretty good at typing out stuff on the iPad, if I'm just sitting in my office or at home in an environment where I'm not going to feel dorky talking to the thing,
yeah.
I think dictating out email responses and things like that is going to be something that I might find myself starting to do. The main thing there is the learning curve, learning how to do the dictation style speech where you speak the punctuation and new paragraph and all that stuff. But I'll have to play around with it a little bit.
What about you, Jeff? Is there anything there that is really exciting for you?
Even though I complain about the color on the display, I'm really, really happy with the display. And that's because I do lots of research from my iPad instead of sitting at my desk and using my MacBook Pro. So the substantially higher quality of text made the purchase right there worth it for me. But then the fact that I do have better graphics in applications where they've been updated to take advantage of that, that's nice because it's easier on my eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And the overall performance, it's not that big of a change, but there's just enough of an improvement in places that have been sluggish for me. And by sluggish, I don't mean my iPad would stall, my iPad 2. But there'd be that extra moment of hesitation as a keyboard would pop up so I could enter an email address, things like that.
Right. Yeah.
That stuff is gone. And for a casual user, not a big deal. For someone like me who takes their iPad pretty much everywhere and is using it as a primary business machine on a daily basis, making those little hesitations go away is a huge thing.
Oh, yeah, I bet.
Jeff, just out of curiosity, have you noticed a weird thing with like the Zoom animation when you're either launching or quitting an app?
No, I haven't.
Yeah, every once in a while on mine, I'll close down an app or be switching an app or something like that, and it'll do that zoom in, you know, zoom out animation, and I get this nice little tracer kind of trailer effect. So I'm hoping I don't have some sort of defect, but...
I will watch for that. I'm assuming with as much as I've used my iPad over the past few days, that if I was having that problem, I would have noticed.
Yeah. I mean, it's not a huge deal. It's this weird thing. And I didn't know if maybe it was because of the higher resolution and maybe a faster refresh rate or something like that. Maybe it's just the timing on that animation. Now it looks like it's kind of like...
Hmm.
Sorry. Okay, so exactly what are you doing to see that? And I'll try and do it right now.
Just either launching or launching an application, so when the application comes up, or more frequently, I think I'm seeing it when I hit the home button and it goes back to the home screen. You know how the app kind of fades back to the home screen?
Okay, I see what you mean. If you're watching closely, it's almost like you can catch the ghost of multiple sizes of the screen as it's shrinking down.
Oh, interesting.
Exactly. Exactly. And I've never noticed that.
I can catch that.
And it doesn't happen every time.
And it also depends on the angle I'm at with my eyes in relation to the screen.
Yeah, it's something interesting I noticed. But
okay.
Huh. So have you guys noticed that... if you're running an iPhone application on the new iPad, that it uses the Retina graphics if they're available for the iPhone version?
I have noticed that the iPhone apps that I've run on my iPad overall look better.
Yeah. I mean, it's actually been shown that it does use the Retina graphics, which is great because on the previous version, they look terrible. And I kind of wondered because there are jailbreak applications that allow you to trick it into loading the Retina resources on an iPad 2, for example, to make it look better. But I guess on the new iPad, they load those graphics automatically.
So does it not give you the whole 1x, 2x thing
anymore?
It
still gives you that, but it looks
better. Better looking.
It uses the Retina version.
So you can go to 2x and have it look fairly decent.
I would say from the comparison shots, and I don't know if you're looking at one right now, but it looks almost identical to, maybe that's...
Like iPad native.
Like iPad native, yeah.
Yeah. I mean...
Which is
nice. As great as the new screen and stuff is, though, I mean, it is bringing some real world kind of issues along with it in terms of, like, I think the points people are making about asset and file sizes on stuff and also, like, newsstand stuff is gonna be a problem.
Oh,
and I've actually already had somebody email me about that. So, meaning, like, a lot of publications like magazines and newspapers that are in the App Store or in newsstand right now, like Wired is a great example. You know, that stuff's generated out of Adobe in a workflow, and it's, you know, like based off either PDF or the whole page being just a JPEG image, and they're at a lower resolution. So when you bring them up on the new iPad, they look like crud.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, especially if it's not rendering the text, if it's just an image.
Well, and almost all of those publications, because of how their workflows are like that. And then if they have to go back and double res those and they're not doing rendered text, if they're going to just like make a ginormous PDF, I mean, a single issue of Wired is already like 300 megabytes.
Uh-huh.
That thing's going to go up to like a gig.
Well, I would say firstly, they should be rendering the text natively on there so you can get stuff like definitions and...
No, because that messes up their workflow, Michael.
Well, I don't really care. I think that I would prefer to be able to copy stuff out of there and do definitions and whatnot.
Yeah, so it's gonna make a difference how they end up doing that.
But I mean, this is what Apple does. It is going to be an issue for sure, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I just downloaded. I had not tried a Wired yet, and I just downloaded it, and it looks like crap.
Huh.
See, that's what you get for trying to cut corners. There's just so many of the magazine designers, I think, were really going for the fast layout style as opposed to properly setting up their magazines.
Yeah.
And then, of course, there's a whole thing about are publishers afraid people are going to try and steal the content out of the electronic versions and whatever. I think a lot of it has to do with trying to make the publication as quickly and cheaply as possible.
Yes, that's more what it's about. Absolutely. And then, you know, there's like the real world problems that developers have. Like, I think, was it one of the developers tweeted out, it might have been Craig Hockenberry mentioned or did a post about the fact that you can't put the full assets for an iPad, new iPad, on a single 30-inch monitor. Is the resolution bigger than a 30-inch display?
Really?
Will actually show it 100%.
Yeah, I think it was Craig that was talking about that.
Holy cow.
Yeah, and he was doing it because if you have Xscope, which is a great application, by the way, for your Mac as a web developer, I use it all the time. I've had it for years. But they added a new feature that will allow you to mirror, basically send what you're working on your screen over to the device, like on the fly. So you can be working there on your image, you know, at 75% size or whatever you need to do to get it to display on your monitor, and then, you know, hit a button. I haven't used the feature yet. It's a relatively new one. And then there's a companion iPad app you run for Xscope, and then it'll throw that image up on the iPad at full resolution.
So how does that work? Is there some kind of app that you have to run on the iPad?
Yeah, you run Xscope on your Mac, and then Xscope app on the iPad, and it just, you know, over the Wi-Fi.
Gotcha.
It renders out and sends that image over.
Oh,
so you can
goodness.
Get a,
I need
you
to
can
get
a, like a real-time preview of what you're, huh?
I said, I need to get that.
Yeah,
I would
awesome.
Use that constantly. But anyway.
Anyway, but yeah, like even like 2 30-inch monitors, you can't get those.
That's
nuts. I mean, that's how high, I think people don't realize how high a resolution that thing is. And so, you know, the assets, when they're rolled in, coming back to what we were talking about, it is going to be, it creates a storage problem, not only on the new iPad, but also for everybody who's running a universal app. You know, your iPhone apps are going to get
bigger,
yeah. A lot bigger, and use up more storage.
You know, did you guys see that Avatron figured out a way? They make this application that allows you to use your iPad as an external monitor over Wi-Fi, and it's been around for a while. But they realized that with the new resolution of the iPad 3, that they can set it up to pull in high DPI. Resolution from your Mac. And for those who don't know, high DPI is a name for something that Apple's been doing since, I think, maybe Tiger even, where they've been including either vector or very high resolution graphics in anticipation of very high resolution monitors, so that you don't get that issue with when you get more and more resolution. Typically what happens on like Windows machines is everything just gets smaller and smaller and smaller. And Apple wanted to avoid doing that to that extent. And so of course you'd have to up the size relative to the resolution on your graphics. And of course that gives you what we get on the iPad 3 and our iPhone 4s, which is much crisper images. And so that's been kind of hidden in the operating system for a long time, and the guys at Avatron figured out a way to allow that to pump over to the iPad 3, and then I think that's coming in a future update, so you'll be able to see. And they actually have a little screenshot of the difference between normal and high DPI, and it's very cool. Do you guys see that?
I have not seen that.
Yeah, the link is in the show notes.
That came out this afternoon, didn't it?
Yes. Yeah, that's in
which accounts for why I haven't had a chance to see it yet.
In the talking points. You guys read.
Oh, hey, we have talking points for the show. How about that?
Yeah. Yeah, but that looks awesome. I wonder if that application has improved. Have you guys used that recently? And because my big issue with that application has always been that it's a little laggy and it kind of makes
that's why I stopped using it.
Yeah, it's a awesome idea. No offense to them at all. I mean, I understand what they're doing is pretty magic, and there's only so much that you can do over Wi-Fi with you know, pumping that kind of resolution over Wi-Fi in real time. But yeah,
generally, I knew the developer who wrote the app Screen Recycler because all of that stuff works off of VNC kind mm-hmm. of technology. So in essence, you know, your Mac ends up being, if I'm getting this the right way, the server, and then you run the app that you're running on your iPad. It's just a little VNC client to kind of handle that.
Yeah.
That stuff. And he said, you know, the issue always was is that none of the VNC clients were really optimized well enough. They just required too many resources. So I think he for his app, which would allow you to use like an old Mac, if you had an old MacBook or you had an old iMac or something like that, as a extended screen. So to get around the problem, what he ended up having to do was kind of write his own VNC client. And uh-huh. I think it's called Jolly Fast VNC. So there's, you know, the optimization needs to be done on the iPad VNC client side. And I mean, just none of the open source ones or a lot of the ones that people use seem to be optimized enough. You know, they're just too resource heavy. And when that happens, that's when you get that lagginess.
Yeah. Well, actually, you know, I think that the Avatrons has, and it's been out, like I said, I think maybe even since the first iPad, but that has improved in terms of speed on the iPad itself. What I was more concerned about was whatever driver they loaded on your Mac in order to have the iPad just show up as another display in your system preferences somehow made OpenGL-based animations like the expose and stuff go a little bit slower and get a little bit chunky.
Oh, so it was more on,
so it was more on the Mac
side
than the iPad. And that
side
may have improved too. It's been maybe a year since I've played with it. So
yeah, I don't know. I just bought a new 23 inch monitor that was really cheap. Mm. So
the newer glossy ones
problem.
Or the, the older Apple Cinema displays or the current ones?
Oh no, I just an HP for $150.
Gotcha.
Okay, well, the fact that you said HP, I feel better about it now because they actually do really good displays.
It's perfectly fine. I mean, I've got it for text. It's for coding. You know, it's for so I can view more text on my screen. So
yeah, that's always good. That,
I'm not really worried about it.
Yeah, I love having my external for that. That's great. Did you guys see that the iPad, the new one, was jailbroken on launch day?
Yep.
Thank goodness. I'm glad we're not going to have to wait for a long, long time for that jailbreak. Of course, it's not available yet for people to use, but not only has Muscle Nerd, one of the guys who's been at this for a long time, done it, but two other entities that I can't figure out off the top of my head, but they've come up with two separate jailbreaks on their own. So it's Ionic and CHPwn. In addition to Muscle Nerd, and
you know,
so they have different methods, which is great. I guess the big trick, and maybe it's already been figured out by one of these guys, I think it has, is having it untethered, because you don't want to have to boot it with your Mac whenever. So
right, that's awesome that it's done so quickly. I just always have to caveat this conversation, and I'm sorry to do this every time, but I think it's important.
Yeah,
because
definitely.
When I get emails from people,
and I got an email
oddness with their iPad, someone will email me like, hey, my iPad's doing this, the Wi-Fi doesn't work, or this doesn't work, or that doesn't work, I would say 98% of the time I'll email them back and I'll say, are you jailbroken? And the answer is yes. And I'm not saying that's directly related to the jailbreak, but from what it appears, based on the emails that I get, I only hear about issues with iPads almost exclusively when it's a jailbroken iPad.
I mean,
take that as, I'm not reading anything into that, but I'm just throwing that out there. I don't know why that is. And I know iPads have problems, but it does bring its own kind of issues, I think. And so I still question what is available in a jailbreak these days that beyond just customizing the UI, maybe, that people really need to jailbreak for.
Okay, so what I like is there aren't as many things on the iPad as I want to do on my iPhone. But for example, I like to install a tweak that allows me to clear out the app switcher. So it only includes applications that are actually running in the background. And it also puts little close buttons on everything, so you don't have to tap and hold to make them jiggle and then close them. So that makes it much quicker to close and manage open applications. I also throw an indicator of how much RAM is being used up in the where the clock is. You get the clock and amount of RAM, and I actually put up the current date up there as well, which is a nice little tweak that you can do with SB settings. And of course, I use SB settings for quick toggles for Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, and a couple other things, as well as I hide a few application icons.
Cool. Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying jailbreak. I'm not fully against jailbreak. I guess maybe the ploy I want to make to people is, before you go out and ask for support, if you have your jailbroken device, unjailbreak it or something, and see if your problem goes away.
Adam, I think that the big message for people thinking about jailbreaking is, I think it's realize that you are messing with the software. You're typically, if you're getting your jailbreak from the dev team or someone who has been at this for a long time, they usually do a really good job at making sure that it's as stable as possible. But of course, there is some little tweaky, sneaky mechanism through which they're performing the jailbreak. And 99% of the time, once you get past the actual jailbreak process, if it works just fine, then you're all good. But sometimes something can go wrong. Maybe you did part of the process wrong, or maybe something else happened with it while it's jailbreaking. Then you can run into issues. That hasn't been happening lately, but even more so, you want to watch out for what you're installing.
Right.
Because you're installing things from Cydia, you can install something that just changes an icon on an application that just swaps out some resources, and that's fine. But then you also have complete access to absolutely everything on your iPad or your iPhone. And that means that whatever random person wrote this software, they have full access to everything, and they can potentially screw something up if they don't have their code set up correctly. And of course, it's not vetted by Apple, so who knows what you're putting on there. Typically, stuff in the Cydia store, if you don't add your own resources or sources rather, that stuff is generally safe. But I have run into situations where combinations of software being installed can really screw up your device.
So. Yeah. The other thing too, I think, to point out, you're right. I mean, those guys do a great job of vetting those jailbreaks and testing them too. The other thing to note about that is check their README file, and specifically the known issues section, because usually they'll define some of these more minor issues that I end up hearing about. Hey, my iPhone's broken. It's doing this. And again, in those 98% of the cases where I ask them, are you jailbroken? And they say yes, then I say, well, which jailbreak did you run? They tell me, and I go check the README file, and 99.9% of the time, right there in the known issues, is the thing that they're complaining about.
Yeah.
You know? It's always minor little things, like, you know, some funky thing with alerts, or, you know, a sound is not honoring the mute switch, or, you know, those sorts of things.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, you got to really, truly realize that that's what you're getting. You're signing up for that when you jailbreak your device. You're signing up for potentially weird behavior on your device.
Yeah, and very rarely do I see like a critical thing, like, you know, all my apps are crashing or that sort. It's these minor annoyance things, but people immediately then go, there's something wrong with, you know, the iOS update.
Yeah.
It's like, well, wait, let's back up a minute and think about really what's going on your device.
Mm-hmm. So did you guys
see
the, yeah, It's important. It needs to be said. And I think periodically too, because as we get new listeners and new people thinking about jailbreaking, you really have to weigh the benefits and understand what you're signing up for.
Yeah. You know, I think a lot of people are still jailbreaking simply because they think they need to.
No, you don't need to. And honestly, I functioned with my iPad 2 for many months without jailbreaking it. And it was a little bit more irritating because it didn't have that switcher tweak that I like. And you know, the RAM at the top. But that's not a big deal for me. On the iPhone, it's a little bit more of a big deal because I like to do things like enable tethering. But yeah, really think about what you're doing and realize that you're signing up for potential weirdness. And I would say, I'm going to say guaranteed weirdness in at least one area. There's going to be something that's a little bit off.
Yep.
And you should have a little bit more of a technical understanding if you're going to do it. Because in addition to doing that, they don't install SSH on there anymore, OpenSSH by default. But you
That's
are,
good.
They are opening your partition with all the system stuff is opened up after that point. So you're a little bit more vulnerable to potential issues with people getting at your stuff and messing with it. But I don't think that's too big a problem anymore. So
Cool. Did
you guys see that the new Verizon iPad will not only just run on Verizon and will roam overseas, but you can also easily pop an AT&T SIM into it, and it'll be an AT&T iPad.
Which is pretty cool.
Yeah, that's great. I would say, so if you're thinking about getting the 3G or the LTE iPad, just get the Verizon one, so you can use AT&T or Verizon on that.
Correct me if I'm wrong, though. I think that only works for the 3G portion because with the LTE, the two carriers are in different parts of the LTE spectrum.
Mm.
Yes.
And the devices don't support... One supports the Verizon spectrum LTE and one supports the AT&T spectrum LTE.
Right.
So you just need to be careful of that. But for 3G, it's fully compatible across both networks.
Yep.
Now, okay, did I miss something then? Because I thought that the feature worked only when you left the United States. Was I wrong on that?
I went back because I saw this information go out, and then somebody told me that, you know, Phil had said in the keynote, and it's not really clear how he says it, but basically he says anything below the LTE band is what he calls world compatible. So I think in that statement, he's saying anywhere in the world, the 3G is cross compatible.
Yeah. Which is cool.
Okay.
And another reason to get the Verizon version instead of the AT&T, according to Verizon Wireless, they allow.
Guys,
yeah.
I have to take a break real quick.
Okay.
Sorry. Put an edit point. I'll be back in about 5 minutes.
Okay.
Boom right now. So.
Yeah.
And I need to keep an eye on him because we've only had him for a couple of days and he's still being house trained. So
cool. Yeah. All right. So getting back on track.
Sorry. I should have told you beforehand that might happen.
That's cool.
I thought he was going to make it.
Yeah.
That's okay. As soon as you said you had to take a break for about 5 minutes, I knew it was the dog.
Yeah. So Verizon is including mobile hotspot feature in all of their data plans. So you can have the 1 gig, 2 gig, 5 gig, doesn't matter. You get a mobile hotspot.
That is so awesome.
That is great. Yep.
And I'm not a Verizon fan, although I'm starting to hate AT&T more than I ever hated Verizon, which puts me in this weird dilemma. Luckily, I wasn't going to go with a 4G iPad. I just went with the Wi-Fi. But when the next iPhone comes, I'm going to be thinking long and hard about that AT&T contract. I'll tell you that right now.
Mm-hmm.
And things like that, like the hotspot thing, are definitely features that I think would push many users like myself over the edge.
Yeah.
Now, Yeah, and see, it's really smart that they're doing the free hotspot thing. Oh man, I'm sorry, guys.
That's all right.
If anyone finds my spleen, just send it back to me.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Anyhow, it's really smart, I think, that Verizon's doing the free hotspot thing, because that's something that's making it very easy for a lot of people to jump into a Verizon iPad. And since you don't have the contracts, it makes it even easier. So I expect they will be drawing in a lot of people that otherwise might have considered getting an AT&T iPad.
Yep. And okay, so have you noticed the charge time increased on the new iPad?
Yeah.
Yeah, is that something
that's no surprise.
Yeah, well, I guess the battery is considerably bigger.
Larger, it's like 70% larger.
Yeah, 70% bigger. And have you really messed with the charge time? I mean, I think it's maybe 4 hours, I would say, to charge an iPad 2 fully.
You know, I haven't run a stopwatch.
But it's not something that's uncomfortable.
No, it's noticeable, but it's not something where I sit back and go, oh, crap, I now actually have to start scheduling when I'm going to charge my iPad.
Yeah. Now, do you get is there more battery life in the iPad, in the new iPad, or is it just relative to the amount of power that it consumes with the new chip?
I'm not really seeing more runtime.
Okay.
No. Although, what I did... Okay, so I picked up my iPad on the Friday that they came out, so last Friday, charged it up all the way, and it was at like 80% when I got it. And then unplugged it once it was fully charged, and then proceeded to go through the entire weekend without plugging it into a charger on purpose. And so I got to, I think around noon on Monday when I hit 6% and decided, all right, I'll plug it in and charge it now.
Yeah.
And so that was with heavy use over the whole weekend.
Yeah. The battery life is still just amazing. I just looked over at mine. I unplugged mine this morning. I've used it, you know, maybe 20% of the day, and it's at 93% right now, and it's now almost 4 o'clock in the afternoon. So... battery life seems to be the same. As far as charging time, I don't notice it because the battery lasts so long. I'm typically in a situation where I know it's getting low, but it's never one of those last minute things. Oh, it's going to die any minute now. Or I very rarely run into that situation. So usually it'll be, oh, I need to plug it in when I go to bed tonight because it's at 30% right now and it's the middle of the day.
Yeah, that's typically how I do it. I don't charge it unless it's like bedtime and I see that it's below 50% and just throw it on there.
Yeah.
So when I checked out the new iPad at Best Buy, I noticed that they were pretty hot. And
really?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. And a lot of people are also indicating that their iPads get significantly hotter than the previous one in certain circumstances.
I have to wonder how many of these people are people that are going from an iPad 1 to an iPad 2. Because the iPad 2 is definitely, I think, I had instances where I noticed it was warmer than my iPad 1. But this one, I have not noticed, even under heavy use, that it's that much or even at all warmer for most of the applications that I do. Now, I'm not doing a lot of high-end games, but I do watch Netflix quite a bit.
Right, which shouldn't really take up too much CPU, I'm guessing.
No, but I think it's the quad core graphics that's bringing, you know, that coupled with the CPU is bringing up the temp just a little bit.
Yeah, well, I think it was Consumer Reports that played Infinity Blade for like 45 minutes and then they measured it at like 115 degrees or something like that.
This is Infinity Blade 2 though, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Because I did this test for myself. After that report came out yesterday, last night I decided to play Infinity Blade because I also wanted to, I was checking something else. I was checking their claim about the battery charging thing.
Yeah, that it won't charge if you're
graphics. At least for Infinity Blade 1. So maybe it's an Infinity Blade 2 thing. I don't have that yet. But I mean, I ran mine an hour playing Infinity Blade and it was barely warm and... you know, so maybe I'm not taxing the GPU enough.
You know, okay, so my original iPad, my iPad 2, I could make them get warm. Just like I can do with my third gen iPad, I have to work at it. The difference is that in my original iPad and iPad 2, the heat increase would feel like overall the entire back would warm up. Now it feels like it's a little bit more localized towards the home button end of the iPad. But it's not uncomfortable. It's not anything that I see as an issue. Matter of fact, it was so much of a non-issue for me, I didn't even mention it in my review.
I get this feeling that people, you know, we're at this point now where Apple has dominated the tablet space for so long that people are looking for just any little thing.
Yeah, I mean,
they can point to and say, oh, flaw, something's wrong with this
thing.
It
gets hot. What they're saying is it doesn't even get too hot like with the titanium power books where if you put it on your legs for too long, you're going to burn your legs. It's more of a, yeah, it gets warmer, but not uncomfortably so. And that's what everybody's saying. It certainly doesn't get uncomfortably warm. It just gets warmer.
Because, gosh, all this stuff makes good headlines, right?
Sure, it gets, yeah.
iPad is, you know, hotter, runs hotter.
I think my lap gets warmer when Nightshade takes a nap on me than when I have my iPad sitting on my legs.
Yeah. Well, regardless, Apple did issue a statement saying that the new iPad, blah, 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 it delivers better stuff. But it does operate well within their thermal specifications and says if customers have any concerns, they should contact AppleCare, which is, I mean, exactly what you should expect from Apple.
The stuff that Apple has. I mean, they should just ignore that stuff. Like
I was kind of surprised that they said
anything. I don't like this new. This is a new Apple thing. I mean, they're starting to acknowledge some of this stuff more. And I don't think everything that the new Apple is doing is necessarily good.
Well, I mean, it's almost a non-acknowledgement. It's kind of a here we're aware of it, but it's not a problem, go away kind of thing.
Okay, how many tablets have fans in them?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you don't even have vent ports on an iPad.
Yeah, thank goodness.
So take that into consideration and keep in mind, excuse me, that any electronic device will generate heat. And
oh my
it's just
God.
A matter of how much it generates. And holy crap, yeah. I mean, this is damn near a supercomputer that's the size of a magazine. And you can feel a little bit of heat coming off of it every now and then. Meh.
Yeah.
I think my iPhone 4S actually gets hotter in certain situations. That thing is pretty warm.
Yeah.
Yeah, my every iPhone I've had has gotten surprisingly hot at times.
Yeah, not as hot as my Android phone that I use as my hotspot when I have the hotspot running for a couple hours. Woo. And that's an LG, so.
Mm-hmm. So there you go.
So, you guys got picks this week?
I do.
Yeah, Jeff, you want to go
first? Is that all we have to talk about?
There's more, but I got to wrap it up.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
It's all good. Jeff, what do you got this week?
All right, hold on. I'm trying to bring up the app so I can tell you more about it. It's called Gain, G-A-I-N, Gain. And what it is an application that lets you track your exercise routines, your fitness program. And
oh, cool.
And so you can tell it, here are the types of exercises I want to do, or you can say, here's the type of workout I want, and then it will help you figure out which exercises to do. And then you tell it, here's my workout schedule, so it knows when you're going to be doing things. And so then it will be sort of like a little pocket coach for you and tell you, okay, you need to do this now, great, now let's move on to this, that sort of thing. And it tracks your progress, and you know, so it's a cool little app. It's free. The thing that will probably annoy some people is that for specific app types of exercises that you might want to do, there are add-ons that you can purchase because it actually shows you how to do the exercises.
So if you're just tracking things, you can track whatever you want, though.
Right. And but if you want to add on the extra modules that have all the extra stuff about a specific type of exercise, then those are like $4 in-app purchases.
Cool. So it's called Gain Fitness.
That's it, Gain Fitness.
And it's free. So, Adam, what do you have for us this week?
All right, I got a game.
Okay.
And I double-checked. Correct me if I'm wrong. We have not done Jetpack Joyride, right?
I don't think so.
Oh, we haven't.
Do you have this game, Jeff?
I have played it, but I don't know how I
have not discovered it. It's a very simple game, but very addictive and very fun. It's one of those great ones that you can just, you know, pull out and play for a few minutes while you're waiting in line. Very, very casual kind of game. What's cool is it's from the same guys that do Fruit Ninja. Same developers, or publisher at least. And basically you're this guy and you've broken into this lab that makes jetpacks, and you've stolen the jetpack and you go flying down the hallways, and you have to avoid obstacles and collect coins and see how far down the corridor you can get. So it's one of these like distance games, kind of side-scroller style, great graphics. They have little vehicles that you can pick up along the way that enhance things. And then they also have another element that I think is really fun, is they have these things called spin tokens that you collect as you're going along. And after you finish the level, it gives you like a little, not roulette wheel, what do I want to say? Slot machine style bonus round that you can do, like a little mini game, and you pull the lever and you can get additional prizes and power-ups and things like that at the end of the game. So that can give you more distance, it can give you a head start in future games, things like that. And it's hooked up through Game Center. I want to say OpenFaint if you're into that, but I like just hooking it up through Game Center. So if you want to, you know, track your progress against your friends in Game Center, you can do that. It's really fun and addictive. And I forget how much it was. I want to say it wasn't very expensive.
The jetpack?
I just downloaded it for free.
It's free, yeah.
Oh, that's right. It was free. That was the other big bonus.
that's a big bonus.
Completely free.
And it's universal.
It's universal, free.
I got to try
it. I don't know. What else can I say about it that's good? I mean, graphics rock.
Yeah, you just got to get it, I guess.
Yeah, cool. Just really fun, casual game. And I don't know how I missed it. I guess it's been out for a while, probably like a year or something like that.
I feel like I've seen that icon, but I haven't messed with it. But cool. So for me, listeners may recall that a while ago I put out a request for a good diary/journal application that would supplement my use of SimpleNote, because I've been using SimpleNote for a long, long time, and I really love it because I can access it anywhere, and the syncing works great. But folders, it doesn't use folders, it uses tags. And so for stuff that's not like me making a list of things or brainstorming or something like that, and it's more of a journal sort of format, it's not so good for that. And so I put out a call for that, and I got a lot of great suggestions from people, and I really appreciate all of those. And but I think that one of you did suggest this to me, which is Day One.
We haven't talked about Day One yet. Really?
I don't think we have.
Day One is really cool.
Yeah, it's great. So it's a notebook journal application that allows you to essentially journal. It's built for journaling. And so you get, it works, there's a universal version for your iPhone and your iPad. I think it's $2, which is crazy. You get a calendar view. You can see all the days that you have written something. You can see entries by year. There's a lot of great ways to organize the different entries that you have. Syncing between iOS devices works either through iCloud, or you can do it through Dropbox. And that's a good thing for me because I'm still on Snow Leopard. And there's a Mac version as well, which is what completes the whole thing for me. So I have the Mac version as well. Sync it through Dropbox. And it, so far, without too many hiccups, maybe slight little delays in syncing, but it's not as big of a deal as it would be with like SimpleNote. It's great. It looks really nice. It's really simple. It has a really sharp look to it. It has some nice fonts, nice ways of adding entries for today or adding entries maybe, because I have a lot of stuff from SimpleNote that I want to move into day one, where the date is relevant for a lot of this stuff, and I would like to throw it in there under the date that I wrote the stuff. And so you can easily tweak the date on which you wrote the stuff and keep track of it and look back in your calendar and all that stuff. They're working on tags right now. They don't have that yet. They're working on tags, they're working on photos, and a couple other things. So they're actively working on it, and it's really cool. So it's $2 in the App Store, and if you want to get the one in for your Mac, I think that's $10.
But no photo support in this one yet?
Not yet. They're working on it.
That's
it's coming.
Cool.
So, I would believe them. They seem like they're pretty responsive and working pretty hard on it.
Nice.
Yep. So it's called Day One. And I guess with that, you can find all of our picks in the show notes at wehavecommunicators.com. You can review the show in iTunes. Feedback, of course, you can send that to feedback@wehavecommunicators.com. That's where you can email us questions, comments, etc. Advertising is handled by Backbeat Media, backbeatmedia.com if you want to advertise. Jeff Gamet is at the Mac Observer, which is macobserver.com. He's also at Jay Gamet on Twitter, and you can find his Zazzle store at zazzle.com/JayGamet, where a bunch of his things are, including the We Have Communicators mug.
And that's an awesome little mug.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Yep. And Adam Christensen's at the Maccast, maccast.com. He's at MacCast on Twitter, and member.maccast.com is the member version of the MacCast.
Yep, that's where you find me. Hey, can Jeff plug your, you want to plug your blog? Let Jeff plug his blog.
Oh, sure.
Rocks.
Oh, yeah, of course.
All right, so it's no secret I spend a lot of time at Starbucks, and if you follow me on Twitter, you're aware of that. So I decided a while ago to start a blog about that. It's called Fresh Brewed Tales. And you can just go there whenever you want and see what it is that I've been seeing in Starbucks, because I write about it. There are photographs and drawings to go along with it to back up what I say. And
yeah, the photos are great.
It's hilarious.
It's great. Yeah, there are some characters at the Starbucks.
And it's a lot of fun. And believe it or not, everything that you read there is true. And not
some of it is actually
true.
Unbelievable.
It's really true.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, definitely. What is it? What's the website?
Freshbrewedtales.com.
Freshbrewedtales.com. Awesome. And you can find me, I'm at Michael Johnston on Twitter, and I do at Little Reviews as well, which is reviews of, you know, whatever. Whatever I decide to review. So with that, we'll see you next time on We Have Communicators.
An internet.
How are we going to communicate this?
The stylus.
We don't want to carry around a mouse, right? So what are we going to do? Oh, a stylus, right?